Well, coaches come in all flavors, I guess we could say. You've got the gruff kind of coach. You've got the wise kind of coach. Sometimes they're foolish. I tell you what, most of those types are captured in the book written or edited by Andrew Blauner. Andy is president of Blauner's Books Literary Agency in New York. And edited Coach, 25 Writers Reflect on People Who Made a Difference, with a foreword by Bill Bradley. Perfect book, I think, kind of in a way, as we, well, you know, we've got Father's Day coming up here. It'd be a great book for that, but I think moms are going to enjoy reading it too. And I hope you enjoy listening to Andrew Blauner as we visit with him about the coaches, the people who made a difference. And I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. I'd love to have you reflect a little bit on maybe a coach who made a difference for you. What was it about that coach or that person that made a difference in your life? And you can do that by calling in at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison. Reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Andrew, by the way, co-edited another book. We had him on a little while back, a collection of 20 baseball essays from 20 great writers. That book is entitled Anatomy of Baseball. That's published by SMU Press. And his current book, Coach, is published by Warner Books. So we're pleased to have him back. Andrew Blauner, welcome.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I tell you what, it's great to have you back, and I've enjoyed, you know, I have not finished, but I've read, oh my gosh, probably three quarters of the stories, and they're wonderful stories. What possessed you to put this collection together?
Well, in some ways, the germ of the idea was set, probably 30 years ago, when I was a kid growing up in Manhattan, and had a couple of coaches that, for lack of a better word, it really made a difference in my life. And you know, as time went by, and you know, I started thinking about it more, just decided to try to see if I could put together kind of an all-star lineup of stories written by writers whom I personally like and admire, that sort of pays tribute to coaches such as the one I had, Larry Burns, in New York City at Collegiate School, who just played an enormous role in my life and is in my life to this day and will always be. And it seemed to tap into a vein for an awful lot of writers who just hadn't been given the opportunity or taken the time to really write the kind of tributes to these people. And just to clarify, you know, we're not talking about pro coaches. We're talking about pro writers who have not gone on to be professional athletes, but really had people sort of at the high school level or lower who really just had a seminal effect on them.
Yeah, and there's some, boy, talk about great writers. What a collection. Pulitzer Prize winners. I mean, these people are top of the line.
Well, that's I couldn't have been happier about it. I was really humbled by the whole process, because it's just like with anything else like this, you set out to find your A-list or your wish list, and you hope to get, you know, a decent percentage of yield of people who have the time, have the inclination, the inspiration, what have you, to do it. And, you know, from Buzz Bissinger, who a lot of your listeners probably know, wrote Friday Night Lights, among other books, had you know, a lot of journalists often are so focused on writing about other people and other people's lives that this really gave a lot of people just this opportunity to reflect on their own in ways that they hadn't before. You know, in some ways, they're 25 little memoirs, mini memoirs in some way.
Yes,
you know,
they
cover a variety of sports. I mean, there's certainly baseball and basketball and football, but there's also, you know, golf and tennis and even horseback riding, because coaches come in, as we know, in many shapes and sizes and on many venues.
And even Jane Levy writes about being a death coach.
Well, exactly. Jane, who wrote the Sandy Koufax book that everyone should read, and she's got a couple of other books in the works. And, you know, I approached Jane because I thought so much of her as a writer and told her what the concept of the book was about. And she said, you know, I got an idea, and I'm not sure if it's going to fly. and she told me this notion of her not wanting to write about a coach that she had, but about the role of being a coach, and as you said, being a quote-unquote dying coach to her best friend.
Bob Lewis.
And I think it's partly because Jane writes about sports so well that she sort of positioned it as, you know, sports being so much about athleticism and our bodies and physicality, and what more sort of physical act do we do other than but beyond dying? And this was just an absolutely powerful, poignant piece about her literally helping to coach her dear friend into the next life, as it were.
Yeah, well, I have to, I'm not ashamed to admit, I had some tears in my eyes there. In reading that one. That was
sure.
It's a wonderful piece. And, you know, you talk about what it takes to be a coach, or she writes a little bit about it, but what do you have some ideas of what makes a good coach from reading all of these and editing them?
Well, yeah, there's some themes that come out, but I think, as paradoxical, if that's the word, as it sounds, some of it is, you know, the only constant is change, or whatever the expression is.
Yeah.
That you know, you have to be adaptable. And, you know, here in New York, the Knicks just hired Mike D'Antoni, and there's a thought of, well, how's he going to coach this team? He plays this one style. His team's played this one style, which, you know, predictably, his response was, I don't have my one style that I play. I look at, you know, it's like the poker analogy. You look at the hand you're dealt, and you play your cards. I think every player and every team needs to be looked at and evaluated, and you know, sometimes, you know, the expression tough love versus unconditional love, and you're going to get a better result. You know, Bill Bradley in his foreword writes about you know, the best coaches enable you to do things that you wouldn't have been able to do on your own. So the question is, how do you effectuate that, and what's the best way to get somebody to play to their potential? And obviously there are life lessons in this, and a lot of coaches end up, if they don't start out, being kind of surrogate parents. So there's obviously a lot more going on in the coach-player relationship, you know, beyond how to hit a curveball and how to make a jump shot.
Yeah, and how to, even though you might have a team, it is made up of individuals, and they all have different, they may have different ways of succeeding. And I guess a coach needs to understand the personality of each person that he's dealing with,
well,
or she.
Exactly, especially when we're talking about kids at you know, what the formative stage where there's a lot of vulnerability and confidence. You know, again, Bradley writes in the foreword about, you know, a well-timed word here or there. I think he says, "Well done." You know, this can go so far, especially for a kid who's really impressionable. And in other cases, you know, you need to be taken down a peg. And I think the best coaches sort of can go both ways on that.
Well, we have Brian from Madison online, and let's go to Brian, see what he's got to say. Brian, hi. Thank you very much for calling.
Yeah, great topic. You stole my idea, because I was thinking about writing something like this in tribute to my high school football coach in Richland Center, Wisconsin, in the 80s. His name was Avitus Rip, and actually, tragically, he died in his mid-60s a couple of years ago. But to the topic, I wanted to just read a really brief excerpt of a column I wrote to my local newspaper about him. I said, "Unlike any other coach I'd played for, we often left the locker room seemingly prepared to run through a brick wall. Having said that, while Coach injected in us the strong desire to perform and prevail, he also conveyed that the opponent only existed on the field. When the final whistle blew, regardless of the outcome, he stressed the more than symbolic importance of shaking hands and moving on."
Yeah. I tell you what, and he had a very big impact, obviously, on you, Brian.
He really did. You know, he was, suffice it to say, he had a reputation of being very colorful. and sometimes colorful implied not necessarily appropriate, but he was a wonderful guy that touched a lot of us. And I played the three major sports, and I don't think there's anybody I've ever heard of that more people think both fondly and amusingly of a guy who just had a tremendous impact on a lot of us as young men.
Yeah.
Well, that's moving, and it's so representative, and you did that so well of so many people, I think, who've had similar kinds of experience. And I get what you mean about sort of quote-unquote colorful. And, you know, the Bobby Knights and Bill Parcells and, you know, you want to call it tough love or something else. I think in this age and era of correctness and coddling a little bit that, you know, some of the stuff that things coaches might have gotten away with in the past would be looked at askance at today. But in some ways, I think, you know, a lot of former players at the time wonder, why is the coach riding me? And then it's only as you grow up and you get older, it's you realize why, and they saw some potential in you, and they wanted you to get there.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thanks for the topic, and I really look forward to reading your book.
Thanks, Brian. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, he sounds kind of like the coach that E.M. Swift had, who was kind of an old school guy.
Well, exactly. E.M. Swift, who again, some of your listeners may know if they're Sports Illustrated readers, Ed Swift is just a terrific all-around writer. And he writes, it's funny you picked that one out, because some of the reviewers said that that's really kind of the quintessential piece in the book. And it's about his old coach, who was sort of old school, as they say today. And you know, not to give away the ending, because this really is, there's sort of a real narrative
right.
to this one. But in some ways it harkens to sort of the It's a Wonderful Life, the movie, where the old coach, who was, you know, a little curmudgeonly in some ways, but, you know, was always there and taught a lot of lessons on and off the field. And then, you know, you graduate and you move on and you think fondly of your old coach, but you don't really know what's going on with him sometimes if you don't keep in touch. And in this case, you know, the old coach falls on hard times, and essentially a call of a kind goes out to the former players, and they rally around the old coach in ways that, again, are really quite moving.
Yeah, it really is. It was a great piece, and I was glad I was able to get to it before the program today, because it is a wonderful piece, and I would not want to give away the ending of that.
Right.
Andrew Blauner is our guest today. He is the editor of the book Coach, 25 Writers Reflect on People Who Made a Difference. He has a foreword from Bill Bradley. It's published by Warner Books. You may have a coach that you'd like to talk about, or maybe you've got a question about the book or about coaching, what it takes. You know, is the old style still okay? For a lot of people, it isn't, but for some people, it is. Maybe you've got a comment on that. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Andrew Blauner about his book today, Coach, 25 Writers Reflect on People Who Made a Difference. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234 in Madison. It's 263-1890. And, well, lots of people online. Let's go to Teresa in Wausau. Teresa, hi. Thank you for calling. Well, wait a second here. First, I better push this button and let you on. Hi, Teresa.
Hello.
Thank you for being with us. What can we do for you?
Thank you for having me. I wanted to make mention of a very wonderful woman who we had coach us over 30 years ago up in central Wisconsin at a high school, D.C. Everest. And it's a Division I, and she was instrumental in getting girls' sports going through Title IX and all. Her name is Jane Johnson. And I just wanted to put it out there for her. She was a fabulous woman, is a fabulous woman. She had a lot of talent on her team and never worked one against another. She taught us so much about prayer and dignity, and she was a great lady.
Yeah.
What sport did she coach?
She coached track and field. She had three consecutive 4x2 state championships with a state record each time.
And what was it about her?
She worked us hard. She was very kind, and always would congratulate us on any small achievement, large achievement we had. She's so proud to this day, and each and every one of us just love her dearly.
Oh,
well, that's really so moving again, and the Jane Johnsons of the world. I always think just don't get enough credit. So it's just wonderful to have you pay that kind of tribute, and you remind me to recommend specifically to you in this book Christine Brennan's piece. Christine Brennan, you may know, is a USA Today columnist and author, and she writes about her old women's basketball coach back in the days before Title IX. You know, very much pioneering and very much going beyond the court and just inspiring. And I can just, you know, imagine there are a lot of people out there who have just wonderful stories like that to tell.
Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you. Have a great day, guys.
Yeah, appreciate your call very much. Clarence in Eau Claire is up next. Clarence, hi to you.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Great, thanks.
Thank you. I say, you know, you talk about the tough coaches out there, and I had a coach in high school. This man would ride you left and right no matter how he could, but he recognized in people, you know, he didn't discriminate against those that were, you know, sports-oriented and those that weren't. I wasn't, but he made sure that we all knew that we were special and that we were, you know, had that athletic ability, and he taught us that, and it was, you know, like I said, he'd run us on the field till we couldn't move anymore, but at the end of the day, he'd tell us, you know, you did a great job, and that, you know, I feel is important. A lot of coaches nowadays don't take that time to just say, you did a good job.
Well, yeah, I mean, that goes to the point, too, of the sort of, what's the word, like intersection between the coaches and parents. And again, very often coaches, especially, you know, so many families, broken homes and divorces and what have you, or just on another sort of cellular level where, you know, you think about it, kids spend often as much, if not more, time with their coach as they do with their parents. And in some ways... You know, and I was one of them, so at a certain age especially, you're not going to listen to something your parent says if it's said a certain way. But a coach is still an authority figure, and I don't know, just sometimes they can say something or we can hear something and let it in a different way. And in fact, given I'm talking on Wisconsin Public Radio, David Marinus, who's one of your own there,
friend of mine,
who's a Pulitzer Prize winner and of course wrote just a fantastic biography of Vince Lombardi.
Yeah.
He writes about his so-called coach-less youth. And in a sense, it's coach playing, it's rather a parent playing surrogate coach. And he dedicates his piece to his late father. And so that, I want to highlight that one, especially as we head into Father's Day.
Yeah, that is a great piece. Clarence, thank you so much. I want to give others a chance to get on here. John in Lancaster, it's great
to
have you.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
It's extremely interesting from my own personal experience 30 years ago in high school sports. And I find it gratifying to hear other callers talking about their wonderful experience. So many kids come into high school sports for different reasons, some of them to excel in the sport they're going out for, some of them just to have something to do with their friends. Where I have had issues was that the coach would ride everybody, and the kids were extremely impressionable, and some of them would love their coach, and they might get more parenting from their coach than at home, like you said. They see their coach more, they see their kids after school more, their friends. And the riding and a lot of times the anger to try to motivate the kids is something that those impressionable kids oftentimes would take with them away from the practice field and exercise with their own friends, thinking that being angry and trying to get a response by, you know, riding them and motivating oftentimes comes with a raised voice. And these kids at that age oftentimes end up behaving the same way they what they get on the field. In other areas, the common denominator that they use to bring these kids together is oftentimes not a high one, where they bring kids, you know, kids will all make fun of the weakest kid. They might denigrate women or gays is quite common. And I think that that also is extremely unfortunate for kids, that they find themselves in a, almost a armed forces environment where they bring kids all around, you know, with different experiences or from different families, and try to bring them together with that one simplest common denominator to elevate themselves with a really easy target.
Well, let me give Andrew a chance to comment. Andrew?
Well, it's certainly, you know, a point well taken, and I know a lot of people think, understandably, of sports as the great equalizer in many ways. And, I mean, I'll just pick up a thread on the caller's comments and say, you know, I think where it extends, for example, to race relations can't be overestimated. I mean, you know, whether it's Bill Bradley or Barack Obama, I mean, so many people have talked about, you know, on the basketball court, you don't see color, and that, you know, you deal with people as equals, and that, you know, in New York City here, people talk about the subway as being the great democratizer, that that everybody's on equal footing there. And, I mean, this book, you asked sort of from where this book grew, this, in addition to the particular coaches I had, you know, the other motivating factor for me in putting this book together was just sort of, in as cliched as it might sound, it's really true, to give back to sports and people who've gotten so much out of it, you know, something that I really got out of it. I mean, it was just the seminal thing in my youth. And in a lot of ways, it's for some of the reasons that your caller is talking about there, sort of the inclusiveness of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of your writers, Francine Prose, had a kind of a negative, I guess you could say, a negative relationship with her coach, and she wrote about that.
Well, exactly. Francine Prose is another just absolutely lyrical writer. She's primarily a novelist, I guess you'd say, but she writes in all forms and venues. And you know, just to back up a step, a lot of the writers in this book, even though it's a quote-unquote sports-themed book about coaches, a lot of them are, most of them are not sports writers.
Right.
And Francine is a great example of that. I don't think she's ever written about sports in any way in her life before. And, you know, her piece is about her... I think the term she probably uses is gym teacher or gym instructor,
yeah.
You know, which all of us had. And absolutely, it was not a good experience. And, you know, a lot of editors or publishers might have said, well, we want this book to be all sort of upbeat and inspirational, and gee whiz, aren't all coaches great. But, you know, that wouldn't be realistic either. And so, you know, it's sort of what you do with that conflict,
right,
or that put down. I mean, John Irving has a piece in the book about his wrestling coach who sort of tried to inspire him by singing the praises, the virtues of being the underdog and being put down and how you respond to it. Ben Cheever, who's the son of the late, great John Cheever, I approached him and he said, you know, I'd love to write something for it, but I'm not sure you're going to like what I'd want to write. I said, why is that? He said, well, because I think it would be the sour to go with your sweet. And I said, look, this is, again, talk about inclusiveness. You know, all submissions are welcome. And we didn't want to just sugarcoat the whole thing. And, we, you know, it's hard to cover everything, of course. But, you know, wherever there is power, and coaches certainly have power, there's also the potential for the abuse of that power. And, you know, that's a whole other book unto itself. But, again, there are as many different kinds of coaches as there are players.
And, John, again, thank you for calling. Bob, I want to give others a chance to get on, including Bob in Madison, who's up next. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Fairly positive story, I think. I'm going to be 70 years old this month. And I signed up for the Ironman in Wisconsin here at Madison, and I've got a great coach, but he's in his 20s for swimming, and I just came from swimming with my coach. Terrific, you know, situation where I'm an old guy and he's a young guy. So, you know, it's not all high school kids and their adult coaches, but when I was 14, 15 years old, I ran cross country and track, and I had good coaches, but then suddenly we had a really good coach. His name was Al McGower, and he was one of the Spanish teachers in the school. He was so unusual because I was one of the slowest on the team, and of course you didn't get cut from track or cross country, you just stuck with it.
Yeah.
You know? And so he made workouts for all of us and goals for all of us, including me.
You know, the, right.
One of the slowest and least valuable members of the team from a team points point of view. And he was great in that sense because he gave me a lot of confidence that, you know, I was okay, I could do it. And I've run 68 marathons now.
Wow.
A lot of my teammates can't run anymore.
Right.
You know, the other great thing about Al McGarry was he actually ran with us, and not too many coaches do that.
Absolutely.
But he was out there on the track and running the cross country course with us, so that was really really wonderful. And
that is an inspiration in itself. And by all means, the experience, you know, applies to all ages and just cuts across everything. And in fact, you remind me, you know, Frank DeFord, who's one of the just great writers in the country, has a piece in the book about Al McGuire,
yes.
You know, in his days at Marquette. And, you know, George Bessie from the New York Times has a piece about Casey Stengel. And, you know, again, those are just two of the three examples where the coaches about whom the pieces are written, you know, are well-known. But by all means, that there are a couple of other illustrations of how coaching and benefiting from it happens throughout our lives, as long as we stay open to it.
Yeah.
It's that positive vibe that, you know, and that encouragement that it's so
absolutely
wonderful from coaches and parents as well. I've got a daughter who's going to run the triathlon with me this weekend, and oh my gosh, you know, see her. She has a physical, you know, impairment which she doesn't even think about, you know, and we treat her like she's really great.
Well, that's wonderful.
Thank you very much. And by the way, good luck in the Ironman.
Good luck for sure.
That's a real test of a person's abilities. That's for sure. Good luck, Bob. Thank you. And Jet in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thanks for having me. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My knees hurt after listening to Bob 68 marathon. I wanted to call in when I listened to the program and mention a coach that I had in high school. His name was Chuck Kubitschek. And kind of contrasting that riding people and being hard on them and kind of an atmosphere of almost a militaristic sense of training that we went through. He was a very gentle man. He hollered. He got us to perform, but he was so incredibly respectful of each and every one of us and so gentle when he needed to be with people who don't respond, like myself, don't respond to that type of leadership, but do respond to being treated with respect and dignity on a level playing field, you know. And he had a profound impact on me, and I'm an educator now, and I remember the way that he treated me. I remember what he got out of me by treating me and my fellow teammates that way, and I feel good having an opportunity to throw his name out there and give him a little love. I haven't seen him in forever, but I have not forgotten the way that he led.
I hope he's listening. Thanks, Jed. Any comment, Andrew?
Well, these are just also great names, Coach Kubitschek. I mean, it can't get better than that. But, yeah, I understand completely the sentiment because, you know, you have the experience yourself, but you just want to get it out there. And I don't have much to add to that call except, I hear you. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much, Ed, for calling. And, Ellen, I want to give you a chance in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi, and here's a good name for you, Coach O'Grady. I'm just calling in to honor my brother John O'Grady, who's gone back to his alma mater and is the head coach at River Falls in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
I'm just so proud of him, and I've come to see really how deeply he affects his students. He's really a true teacher, and we're just so proud of his family because he recently got inducted into the Wisconsin Hall of Fame, Coaches Hall of Fame, and it was wonderful. His friends told me that so many of his students go on to become coaches themselves, and I guess that's really says something about him. So I'm going to get your book and give it to him for his birthday.
Although
he doesn't want to acknowledge he's having a birthday coming up, but I want to give him your book.
Thanks so much. And that's such a good point, too, that, you know, there is sort of this fraternity and sorority of coaches, and you hear about the cradle of coaches and one breeding the other, and a lot of coaches, you know, John Wooden, the great coach from UCLA, you know, always said he's a teacher. And just so many of these people who are doing so much good work for all the right reasons, not for fame, not for glory, not for money, but it's almost like they're just a breed apart, a lot of coaches, and so many, most of them just are unheralded. So, again, it's just to be able to celebrate the uncelebrated is just a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ellen. And a lot of great coaches wind up never leave their state, or they never leave the grade school or the high school they taught at.
The coach I had, who was the most seminal of my coaches, Larry Burns, who I mentioned, I mean, he was a great basketball coach, and he had offers to go to Notre Dame and coach with Digger Phelps, and, you know, but he stayed loyal to us, and we would have been happy for him, but we would have been heartbroken if he had ever left.
Maureen in Eau Claire, it's your turn now. Hi, Maureen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just I felt compelled to call in because I'm the daughter of a coach. I grew up, my father was a high school coach and English teacher for over 50 years. And when he died in 1999, you know, I'd heard stories, we had all heard stories of the many players and the many games and all. Well, when he died in 99, we had a great turnout of former students and athletes. And it was like all the heroes were in the room at the same time. The, you know, people, younger players had heard of these older players, and there they all were. Mm-hmm. And we had a photo display of his many years in the many places that he was, and a man came up to me, and he said he knew him from Hillsboro. My father's name was Marty Crow, and he knew him from Hillsboro, and I knew my dad had been there early in his career for just a year, and I said, oh, I don't have any pictures from Hillsboro. What can you tell me? And he reached in his pocket and pulled out a keychain with a basketball on it, and he said, we won the conference championship, you know, 50 years earlier, and he still had this. It was, I don't know, he was certainly a hero of mine, and I saw the power of what a coach and a teacher can be in young people's lives.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you.
That's a great perspective to add to the mix, too, the sons and daughters of coaches who, you know, because of their fathers and mothers, you know, dedication to their players and teams, you know, maybe don't get to see their parents as much as they would like. So there's a sacrifice there, and we all got to know our coaches' children, and there was really sort of a family-like feeling there.
Thank you, Maureen, very much for sharing that with us. I really appreciate it. And I want to get Jerry and Ashland a chance, too. Jerry, hello. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, and what a nice book of events that you've accumulated there, so thanks for doing that.
Sure.
I'm calling for my coach out of Colorado, in Aurora, Colorado, as a gymnastics coach. He was really great of instilling, you know, he spent a lot of extra time with us at practice outside of school. He would camp with us and travel with us to different events and gave us individual attention to get better in our sport of gymnastics. One of the things that he's instilled in me is self-control. I remember not doing so well at a meet and stormed off and slammed things around, went into the locker room, and he came in and told me, you know, you're never going to act like that ever again. And so the anger of self-control in that area, I've been helping my son overcome his, and it's just been really great. It's helped me a lot in my life to cope with different situations of events that bring up disagreement, and so it's been great. He's also helped me to become more dedicated in time about, you know, if I'm going to be doing two things. He said, you're not going to be great at doing two things, but you will be great at doing one thing. And so just keep that in mind.
Andrew, comment?
Well, that's also just such a great point and such a universal too. I mean, there's a piece in the book, Coach, by Bob Wolf, well-known sportscaster,
yes.
Who, you know, sometimes coaches tell you not what you want to hear, but what you need to hear. And sometimes it's, you know, in Bob's case, it was, look, you want to be a Hall of Famer, you can be it as a broadcaster. You're not going to be it as a ball player, which was a tough pill to swallow, but he turned out to be absolutely right. And I heard someone along the way say, you know, when they get to things that come up in life many years and far removed from the fields and the courts, you know, they think, what would Coach do? What would Coach say? Or what would he advise me to do in this moment? And it's powerful. And it's, you know, it's like when the clay is soft, especially when we're younger and these things get hardened, they stay with you for better or worse, mostly for better in these cases.
Well, I've really enjoyed reading the book. A lot of different emotions. The book, you know, George, you have the late George Plimpton's coach. It's a very funny piece on golf lessons, on his golf lessons.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are two or three golf pieces, and I couldn't possibly have a book like this without including something by George Plimpton. And yes, the book is not without its funny moments. That's a high point.
You've got some funny moments and some moments that will bring you to tears, but and also some inspiring moments. But I think the most... The one of the neat things about it is that you get to reflect on people in your own life as you read it who were great coaches in one way or another and who made a difference in your life.
Exactly. And it goes from, you know, Bud Collins, who people know as a tennis commentator on TV, to Pat Conroy, who's a novelist. And it's something that's touched such a great many number of lives.
Well, Andy, thank you very much for being with us today and for editing this book. It's a great book. I enjoyed it very much, and I know there'll be quite a few purchased here in the state of Wisconsin. I hope so.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Andrew Blauner is president of Blauner Books Literary Agency in New York and is the editor of Coach. 25 Writers Reflect on People Who Made a Difference, a foreword by Bill Bradley, and it's published by Warner Books, and I can recommend it to you. I've been really enjoying reading it. Some great writers, some wonderful writers in that book reflect on their coaches, some good, some bad, some funny, some sad. So it's the whole gamut, and I know you'll enjoy reading it. And I know you're going to enjoy our next guest coming up, Shirley Bauman, auctioneer and certified appraiser, back with us to talk antiques, appraisals, and auctions. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.